Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to New Books in Performing Arts, part of the New Books Network. I'm Andy Boyd. Today I'm speaking with Sylviana Wood about her book of plays, Barrio Dreams. A quick note before we begin. Sylviana is hard of hearing and uses a transcription program for phone calls. As a result, the sound quality is a bit lower on this episode, and there's a slight delay between my questions and her answers.
Sylviana, welcome to the program.
Okay. Thank you. I'm a little mixed up here and a little confused, but that's normal, okay? And I hadn't been out of my house since March 13 with a virus. I'm very glad you're doing this, and I wish you the best, okay?
Thank you. How did you first become involved with theater?
Well, okay, right now I'm going to tell you I do jump around with chronological order and places. A long time ago, I was living in Salinas, California, and I was in high school, and I wrote a book report for K Mutiny, and the teacher at the bottom wrote, "Have you considered creative writing?" Because I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to go into a political speech, but when I was a student and everybody else I knew, the classes were always focused on grammar and punctuation. Even today, I hardly find any creative writing for young kids and high school kids. So after she wrote that, I went and signed up for creative writing. And then I signed up for a little drama class there. I was a senior by then. And then later, I started at Hartnell College, and it was essay writing. But the teacher there, too, said, you know, these could become plays. And I said, oh, okay. Because in the drama, we were handed the script. We didn't improvise. But when a second teacher told me, you know, that I had a good imagination because I invented a lot. So she says, okay, you should be turning these into plays. And I said, okay, so that got me started. Is that enough?
That's great. Who are some of your inspirations as a young playwright?
As a young playwright, well, by then I'm young. There was nothing when I was a young one, okay? Nothing. Nothing at all as far as writing plays or producing plays or acting, okay? So as a young person, I didn't have that. What happened was as the years went, you know, Movimiento Chicano got started with Liz Valdez, and then there was Tenaz, that's Teatro Nacional de Aztlán, and they had conferences and workshops and speakers. And I met at a workshop, this is Mexico's leading playwright. His name was Emilio Carballido, and we had lots of talks on the elements and the best advice he gave me. He says to me, okay, if you want to be a writer, you have to write. I said, oh, great. Okay. And then when I was translating for him at some of the workshops from his Spanish. So that was one of them. I think I got inspiration from everybody that I walked. There was one teacher at, there was another teacher at Creative Writing said the same thing. This I tell every single person, and I'll tell it to you too. You have to view the world and go out in the world as a writer, and you have to use your five senses and just put yourself into the and you can't teach imagination. Okay, when I was a little girl in elementary, I was always a very fast reader, and I would put my finger on the page and daydream. And then one of the things that the teacher would do, she'd send me to the library, and that was for me was the best. And then one thing, you know, memory is crazy. I went to a movie in Spanish because it was only a dime. I couldn't afford the dime. And all I remember now, maybe 70 years later, the movie ended with a stagecoach in the mud driving off, and this letter fell, and the stagecoach wheels stomped on it, and that was the end of the movie. So that's me like, what happened? Who was the letter for? What was it? I still don't remember, but it stuck in my brain that I could continue something, you know, that just that envelope in the mud. I never wrote about it, but I'm saying that was enough for me to think more. Hey, I can invent something from just that envelope. So that gets me home.
Could you talk a little bit more about your involvement with the Movimiento Chicano?
The Chicano movement? Are you like, okay.
Yes.
I told you when I was in Salinas, I knew nothing about boycotts, nothing. Moved to Tucson. And there was a very, very strong group of some of my friends that I knew back in elementary school. And there was what we call the El Rio struggle, because it was a very fancy golf course company, whatever. And we were saying that the neighboring barrios, the kids didn't have swimming pools, didn't have movies, didn't have anything, not even any grass to go. So we did this huge, I wasn't a leader. I just went because they would tell me to go to the meetings. So right now I'm going to tell you, I don't think I'm an activist. I think I'm a storyteller, okay? And I would just go to all these things and see these things happening. And it took a lot of work. It took a lot of work, a lot of meetings. And then finally, we ended up with a park, a neighborhood center. The neighborhood center has a library, daycare, performance area, and meals, and a lot of goodies. I'm probably leaving some out, but then other parts of Tucson also got their centers, but they didn't have to go through the struggle that the El Rio group did. And I'm still very friends with my boycotters. We were actually just marching with signs and saying that we needed that for the kids, and we did get it. But I don't have the dates, okay? Because they did film us right and left, and there were arrests. And then by that time, we started marching over to the U of A also because of other issues. And then little by little, I got involved just because they would call me, like, we wanted bilingual education, especially beginning at elementary, and we wanted services for the elderly, like the buses. And so all of that is what was part of me here in Tucson. And then my brothers and I and some friends, we wanted to do some skits just for entertainment, okay, so at these meetings. And then that's when I met Barclay Goldsmith, and he ended up forming Teatro Libertad, and he asked me to be part of that, and I went to that. Previous to that, we had Teatro Pueblo. Basically, what we were doing, we couldn't find scripts, so we started to do Luis Valdez's Actos, which had to do with the farm workers and strikes, and we were giving it at churches and meetings and passing out leaflets. And so that's and then Tenaz formed later, I don't know the years, like an umbrella group of all these teatros throughout the USA and some in Mexico. And some of them came into the festivals and we saw plays. I ended up at the city, in Mexico. Mexico City. And Luis Valdez's group performed a play there at the pyramids. They marched in, and all of that was very impressive. And I said, uh-oh. So, and they did a whole play on the Chicano. But I'm telling you, Andy, I was very green. I didn't know anything about Chicano. I didn't know anything about activism. But I did know that we needed to support the farm workers. Back to Steinbeck. Okay, dear, does that answer?
Yes, definitely. Did you think of your plays as a form of activism?
Okay. Let me see. Well, you see what happens, and that has to do with your writing elements, okay, for playwriting. I focus on the character first. You know, that's it. I'm going to develop my character. And I develop him through the dialogue, how he reacts to other people and their personality and their actions and all of that. I'm never thinking of activism. It just starts working itself in, and it's very mild. It's not, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go protest and do all these things. The workers, I focus more on the workers, not the workers, my character's feelings about things. And one teacher, Emilio, my friend, he said, don't worry about themes. He says the themes have a way of working in like worms, and they're going to come in and work their way through the character and the plot. So that's what I do. I really don't start out saying this is about blah, blah, blah. This is about discrimination. This is about immigration. No, I don't start like that. I start, okay, this is my guy. He just landed we're looking for work. He has a little paper. And that's what I proceed. Okay, so anyway, that's about it.
All of your plays use English and...
Something funny when you ask that. My teacher, Emilio, he became my friend, and we brought his plays to Tucson, and he passed away about 2009. Anyway, he says, because people will say, why do you write that? And how do you write that? And how do you get, what makes you write? He said, you know what? He said, tell them this story. I think the word in English is centipede. You know that little animal, the little insect that has a lot of feet? Okay, centipede. He says, the centipede would go across the town, and one of the persons stopped him and asked the centipede, okay, how do you make your all your legs move at the same time, and then the centipede starts to explain. He says, first I move this one, then I bring the other one behind, then I move the second one, and then the centipede tripped over his feet and fell, and then the worker says, okay, never ask a centipede how he walks. So that's what Emilio says. I think every writer develops their own manner and style. I like to give advice, and I'm the most undisciplined person, okay? I keep telling people, well, right, start with a scenario and schedule your time. I don't do that. The way I work is I take very long walks. I can walk 20 miles if I feel like it. And it's what I call germinal ideas. Something comes to my mind, and then I keep developing it as I walk. I don't write in longhand ever. So then I when I do come home, I might make a little note, and I just mark it marinating. Something's marinating. I'm working on a beer can collector, so he's marinating right now. Because when I walk, I see the cans of beer, and then I get this. I'm not a drinker. I pick up the can and I read all these new things, Michelado, Miche something, and Camaro and all this. So I'm working on him. He's an old man, and it's a love triangle with the neighbor and the mechanic and the woman that they both love. So that's germinating.
All of your plays use both English and Spanish, and some even use other languages like Yaqui. What made you decide to write your plays bilingually?
I felt that there was an audience need for my audience members to see themselves on stage, and then I wanted to be realistic. All my actors that are bilingual were super good, and I think that, well, you know, because when we were in school, we were forbidden to speak Spanish, later, maybe they develop bilingual classes, but I don't think I write, but somebody that speaks only English told me, oh, we understood completely because your actors did the actions. You know, there's a lot of pantomime, facial expressions, movement. So if I ask you, do you want some if I ask you in Spanish, do you want coffee? And you answer me, no, I hate coffee. I could do that in the two languages. When I said, would you like coffee? She would say, no, I hate coffee. Throw the cup to the floor, get up, make a face. So see, so that works good. What I was saying about relating to the characters on stage, my main objective is, okay, I want you to see yourselves. I want you to see your relatives. I want you to see everybody you know up on stage. And it happens. When I finally finish, somebody will walk up and say, you know what? That was my aunt. Or you know what? That was my grumpy grandfather. And so that's really the thrill for me. The actors breathe my lines, and then the audience connects to that. Okay? I love that. Okay, mijo. You need a cane to. No, you need a tape over my mouth. Okay, mijo.
No, this is great. This is fantastic. Your play, Once in a Barrio of Dreams, is a collection of three one-act plays. Why did you write the play in this way?
Okay, I see what you're saying there. What happened was I was teaching, Barclay Goldsmith got me a class at Pima College, when we were just calling it Teatro Chicano or Chicano Theater, and my actors did not have scripts. If I get on the soapbox, we couldn't find any scripts for them to be using, and you know. So I would gather them in a circle and just discuss current events, things from the past, stories that I knew. So then somebody says, well, why don't you write them down so we can have them? And so my very first work with them was I did the stories from the barrio, which was, you know, the ghost stories and all. And then different things developed. And then I had the three actos, and we started giving them at different places. The students became a group. They called themselves Teatro Chicano. And one time we even took this one that you're talking about, the three actos, we took him to Phoenix. And so that's the only reason. And I do think one-act plays are really good for kids, for the libraries, and, you know, they're quick. And you could have a dinner, you could have a meeting of something or other and end with a play. So, and I don't know. Well, Luis Valdez had shorter ones. Yeah, he had the actos. He was calling them actos, and it involved the farm workers' struggle. And I think that gave me an idea, saying, okay, I could do one-act plays with the actors. And sometimes the actors would actually give me more ideas, you know, because some of these one-act plays, somehow, back in my university years, I wrote research papers, very boring ones, on some of the folklore. Oh, I had a class in folklore, and then I wrote a thing on tamales and things like that. But you know, a research paper doesn't stare anybody. but they can become a one act, some of those things. So I do encourage people to start with a one act play.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can go back to doing what you love this spring. Looking for gourmet meals? Try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and
and asparagus. And this is the part I really like. No fuss, no mess meals. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, or cleaning. You simply heat and savor the good stuff. Factor is the solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. Head to factormeals.com/NBN50 and use code NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code NBN50 at factormeals.com/NBN50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Your playwriting style is very theatrical, and you mix comedic and tragic elements. How did you develop your style?
Okay, we're back to comic and tragic. How did I develop this style? When I said that you have to work with your senses, and here I am with hearing loss, but I did a lot of eavesdropping when I'm on the bus and I hear all these things. And I think this is personal. I think that the two elements, comic and tragic, are together, you know, like when you see a theater mask, humor and tragedy. And I think that, because I was doing TV work as a character that was very humorous. And I developed that from my mom. My mom was the sweetest person, and she could just talk about everything. And she could sing. So anyway, as part of, I think it's a balance. I think we need the comic, you know, especially right now with the virus. You know, Anyway, I think it's slowly developed. I think that I'm a ham, okay? I like to perform. I'm a very shy person, believe it or not. Very shy. But you put me somewhere that I have to talk and do a comedy, I'll do it. It's just my style and a lot of hand movements and faces. I'm the best face maker. So... another influence was the movies again from Mexico with Cantinflas. He was the greatest wordsmith. I call him a wordsmith. And some of the other guys there in the Mexican movies, I don't remember too many of the other movies, but I think when you write something, I'm not writing it. When I'm writing it, I'm not thinking right now, right that minute, okay, this is funny, this is true. It just kind of rolls around and decides to be funny. That's it. But
you wrote one.
My style by seeing and hearing and seeing other people. So that's it. And besides me wanting to be an actor. Okay. I'm reading. You wrote
one character, Mrs. Martinez, who is a shut-in. What inspired you to create that character?
Okay, let me read. Oh, yes. Okay. Even now, this relates to the virus crisis. I'm walking. I walk 4 miles every morning. And people are not coming out. But back when I was little... a little girl in Barranita. My grandmother, there was a man, the landlord lived in a trailer. And then that character that I developed later, Nacho, he lived in the garage, and he was very poor. We'll get to that one later. But I'm seeing, in those days, my grandmother would send me with plates of food just because she wanted to. But now, in these days, you know, they're stressing mental health, all these things, physical health, everything with the virus. And it's very sad because we can't have that communication with a person unless it's phone or with you. And but then the other thing is that besides getting, you know, the effects of non-conversation, people are glued to the computer. You know what I feel about the computer. But anyway, the shut-in, that lady that I developed, Senora Martinez, she was more or less still grieving. And There's a lot of people that don't speak about what they're grieving, and so I wanted her to have a friend with a militante. So it's really hard for me to tell you how I create a character. It's crazy. We have a bread pudding in this area, in parts of Mexico all over, that's called a capirotada. It's during Lent. Every person has a different recipe. Everybody throws in everything they can think of. So that's what I think, that when you're a writer, you throw in everything you want and throw out and put it to bake. Okay, mijo?
Yeah, that's great. You also wrote a play dealing with the issue of Alzheimer's and someone who has to care for their mother.
My mom, right? My mom could sing, and even when her memory was going, she could still sing songs from World War II, like Stardust and all of these. And in the play, I work with memories and the trouble for the daughter, Consuelo. Okay, mijo. But yeah, it is based on my mom.
Great. Was that difficult for you to write about such a personal subject?
Well, what happened was, it's funny. I had already, I was writing it in bits and pieces, like I tell you. I would visit mom, then I would visit my other brothers and sisters, and we would try to get mom to talk. And then I invented stuff. In the play, she goes to Veracruz. That's not true. I went to Veracruz, and then I said, I'm going to place her as a young woman. And my play ends with her remembering that memory as she's sitting there, and I have two young persons come out and dance, and we see the lady just immersed in her memories, and because we don't know what the memories are in that. I had some actors as part of a Teatro Chicano, and we had a reading, but we couldn't find money to produce it. But then I got the call from Jorge Piña, a super good friend of mine at Guadalupe Cultural Center in San Antonio. He says, we have some money for a playwriting and residence, and can you come and give me a title? And I said, okay. And so he produced it. Oh, and then they took it to New York, to the Bronx, for one of those festivals. That was a super experience. They flew us there. It was when I say a Tenaz Festival, in the Bronx, a whole bunch of groups came to perform. So we performed Amor de Hija there. And it was great. It was great. And like I said, it was before the word Alzheimer's came about. Now it's bandied. But I don't say the word. But I read and read and read and read and read. This is another advice I give to writers. A lot of people say, write about what you know. I go, start with what you don't know and then start searching for that. And that's how I started with Alzheimer's. I didn't know anything. So I started reading and reading and reading about memory loss and the brain, and I'm still mixed up. Okay, but that's what, that's really what works, because if you don't know something, like I was in Oaxaca, I had never heard that music, and it ends up in my play. You know, I said, oh, now I know this music. Here in the border, we just know mariachis and enchiladas. And I'm saying, nope, there's lots to Mexico, which, okay, mijo, I want to stop. But it was difficult, but I still had my mom. And so it wasn't that sad until way later when it really got super great. When I was writing about her, it was just the beginning. And they explained that some of the memory loss, it comes from different places, but some of it is very slow progressive. So my mom's was slow for quite a while, but I still feel a very good feeling when I side performed in San Antonio, because I kept thinking to myself, I've brought my mom back on the stage, you know, and that's what counts as a playwright. Your characters are breathing life to your lines. Okay, that's it. That's another way to explain it. Okay.
That's fantastic. And then your play, Yo Casimiro Flores, incorporates elements of Aztec culture. that something that you grew up with?
Oh, Casimiro Flores. What happened was I did a lot of traveling, and I'm the kind that winds up in a museum, okay? In Oaxaca, I ended up with Benito Juarez Museum, his house, and then I wander all over. And, Casimiro Flores, that also was Jorge Pena calling me and saying he had, binational, by something, grant money, and we had to team up the different disciplines. So I was a playwright person. We had to write a description of what we wanted to do. It could be a playwright with music, a playwright with dance, you know what I mean. And so I ended up getting it, and my writer friend was Raul Gonzalez Guzman from Monterey, and he was a composer. So then we studied, and Jorge went and found somebody that knew more of the culture, the Yaqui culture and the dance. And the Yaquis have a very famous dance called the Deer Dancer. And you need permission, and they gave me permission. So that's basically the Aztec culture. Well, because I was dreaming up things, and I think I got Mitlantecutli, the god of the dead. And I said, I like that. So the whole plot is the janitor has to take four bodies over to the Aztec heaven. I had no idea. And then I said, okay, I'm going to put characters like Cantinflas, La Llorona. And it was a very interesting, because I could put a little note for Raul, my music composer. And I would just say something. I said, I need some music for the dream. I need some music for crossing the border. And so that's what did it. I didn't focus that much on the real Aztec, except that Mitlantecutli, the god, shows up with a janitor and tells him, you have to take four bodies. And that was a plot. So that hit me home. But now I'm studying everything. Now that I'm studying the pyramids, now I'm in the Aztec, Mayas, Toltecas, Olmecas, and we didn't get to this word, and the Mexica. But in my political work, I never knew that I was a Chicana, okay? I never knew I was an activist, a Chicana activist. I still don't. I'm a storyteller. But a lot of the things, again, that we don't know enough about. I was wondering in the pyramids over there in the Yucatan area. I didn't know anything about the Aztec culture. When I was a student, even at the beginning of elementary, we knew nothing about Mexico. We were not taught anything about Mexico. If we were taught something, it was Pedro goes to the market on a burro. Oh, so that's all I knew. And then I did take trips to Nogales with my relatives, and I was in love. They called me gringa because my Spanish was very bad. It still is. It's still bad. But Nogales had a lot of things that just fascinated me. I'm just a city nut. And then my uncle would say, go bring some water from the well. And I would put that pail down and come up with the water. And then he had pigs and they made cheese. And I just loved going to Mexico. But I'm still complaining. We did not know anything. And somehow in Mexico, somebody would say, correct me. Well, don't you know this and this and the revolution? Don't you know this and that? Nope, but I'm going to learn. So that's what I was doing. I did a lot of tours all these years. I'm missing a few states, but from Oaxaca, I got that play. And then Sonora comes in there with Adelos por Oaxaca, because you have to cross part of Sonora. Anyway, like I said, it's a capirotada. You throw in everything. Okay, mijo. I do want to stress two things. The one about let me see. I made notes, and then I got them all mixed up. You're saying surreal imágenes, but the characters and this. So where did I get the idea? Okay, this was very easy. Okay, my grandmother, and I have it written down somewhere, and she says, when you really, really are close to somebody and they leave you, their spirit stays with you.
Your play, A Drunkard's Tale of Melted Wings and Memories, explores the lives of several World War II veterans living in poverty in Tucson. What inspired you to write this play?
Let me see. I'm about the third line down, and it says World War II veterans and the poverty. I didn't focus on the poverty. What I wanted was that drunkard Nacho, who doesn't want anybody to forget that those 17 men won the Medal of Honor, you know, and that's what he stresses as he's drinking, says, you don't remember them, you don't remember me. That play started, let me explain, when I tell you, when somebody says, why don't you write about this and that? I was wandering around somewhere, and this person said, why don't you write about the World War heroes? And I said, because I don't know any. I did have my dad's cousin was killed in Europe the day before the armistice was signed, and my mom's brother served, and he was given citizenship for serving. So I said, that's all I know. So he found me a little booklet with those names of the 17 people, and I never know how to explain this because I don't know the word demographic, but he says that's the highest number for that population of Latino, Mexicans, whatever. 17 of them won the Medal of Honor. And when I was San Antonio, I recognized the name Cleto Rodriguez, and he was on my list. And so I said, okay, that was my main, let me see. So I really didn't focus on the poverty, but I know for a fact that the veterans need a lot of medical help. They need a lot of assistance. They need a lot of help with the bureaucratic paperwork, and they're overcrowded, and you know, so that is important. But I really only knew that the man that lived in a garage, and then the gossips would say that he was so poor that he could only eat dog food, and that Skippy's was his favorite. So the spirits, and I think that I don't know. I back to the spirits. I think that what I started doing in Amor de Hija and maybe some other stuff, I was working with flashbacks. But then I thought to myself, well, heck, I could have a flash forward. I did invent a flash forward in some of the stuff because it's sort of like the future that we don't know, but we can. What an imagen is for me as a writer. I imagine it, and I see it in my brain, and I bring it out and write about it, and then the actors can act it. Okay, did that make sense?
Yes, that definitely made sense.
Okay, looks like he hopped around again. Let me see. Oh, yeah, you're answering me. Okay, mijo, I could talk for hours because I love to encourage writers. If I end up with anything, I want people to write, okay?
What would be your advice to a young writer?
Okay, let me read. Well, I made sense. What would be your advice to you? Oh, that's so easy. I got that all my life, okay? Besides, if you want to be a writer, write. Okay, that's number one. Number two, go out in the world as a writer. Use your senses. If you're at a party, look at people. Drink whatever you're drinking. Talk to this person. Listen. And then eavesdrop, because you're going to hear a lot of stuff. And these little ideas do not have to be a complete scenario, because the scenario will develop. You could say, teenager goes to her first party. You know, okay. Then what happens there? Oh, I don't know, but I'll start thinking of stuff. So my advice always, see yourself as a writer. Well, not always, because you need a break. But And back to the five senses, we forget that there's touch, and I guess you can connect emotional, physical, mentally. All these things are going to create the character and the dialogue. But I'm saying don't get stuck with trying to develop all of the timeline, the plot, the you know, all these things, the conflicts. I think that this is the second advice I give. Maybe the 10th, form writers groups. I've been a member of one group for over 20 years. We meet, we have a real nice dinner or lunch. We read each other's part. Oh, we have prompts and we write and we give. The thing there is we insist it be positive impact, okay? Positive feedback. and uh, and then we want to revise it. So I would tell people, the other thing that all the teachers told me all my life is go see plays. If you want to be a playwright, go see plays, read plays. And, that's a little harder, but back to the groups, you can have reading groups. You can be in libraries and do dramatized readings. Just put out the scripts to your actors right there, and a stage manager, and maybe a musician. I love music. That'll liven up anything. So basically, I'm just saying, you want to be a writer? Write. Go see the world as a writer. Number two, don't get stuck on form and structure. That, those can just jumble and come together. And the scenario, I do advise the scenario. I don't follow it, but I do advise it because it sits you down. The other thing to young writers is set up a schedule, you know, and say, okay, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to walk in and start writing this and that. Another teacher told me, when you don't have an idea, sit in front of, this was in the typewriter days, not computers. Sit in front of a typewriter, stick in a blank paper, you know, and just a page, a blank page, and sit there, and the words are going to start coming. So you don't have to have your story or play written out before you start typing. That's the other lesson, okay? And I know some writers do write in longhand, and some of them do the journal writing. I did page one. So that's, what I'm saying, basically, if it works, it works. You know, it's up to you. And I found my own way works so far. But I have a beautiful friend, Denise Chavez. I'm going to end up with her because she just sent me a book yesterday about her. It's an old adventure that she did rafting down the Colorado River. And she wrote that, and she said that to me yesterday. I got to thank her. But when I'm saying experience the world as a writer and then get into other things. A long time ago, I told somebody I want to jump out of those airplanes, bungees, whatever, but I didn't do it. But and that experience is going to lead to something. So and it's a very tough world. My struggle, I'll tell you. My struggle is my language because I do bilingual, and I cannot find enough bilingual readers for my manuscripts. So I was very lucky, and I do want to thank the U of A Press because they helped me so much with corrections and whatever, with computers and whatever, and the publishing. So it's still my problem because I have some short stories, and then I'm working on my beer can collector, and so... the other thing I do advise sometimes, there's a lot of contests that are asking for work. I don't do it, but I'm telling you, well, send your short story, do this and that. And California has a lot of those. I don't think Tucson does. But like I said, I still think that doing dramatic readings at different places, right now not with the virus, but senior citizens would love to have groups come and read to them. And then the young students, you know, you could dramatize Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, and they would love it. You know, it's just a thing. You have to be involved. And we're back to this virus that's driving me crazy. So I really am very, very grateful to you. And I'm gonna end up with my thanking my very, very good friends. Barclay Goldsmith here in Tucson, Jorge Pina at the San Antonio, and then Emilio, who's gone, Emilio Carballido, and then my family that has always supported my work, and then I think I want to thank everybody in the world that I meet and smile. I'm a smiling person, and they give me ideas, so I'm thanking the whole world, okay, and eventually when... I think Borderlands is going to do a reading of Amor de Hija. Eventually, I'm praying that it gets produced here in Tucson and in the world, okay? So thank you, Andy, and I do want to thank you. I know I talk too much, so you can cut me out, okay?
No, this was great, Silviana. Thanks so much for being on the program.